Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal, and you're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Man, we've been talking about what happened in 2018 and what we can look forward to in 2019.
Yeah, so we have Miles Iblock. He's here with us. He's the chief investment strategist for Dynamic Funds. And Miles, we were talking before the break about what surprised you when it comes to those markets around the world. And I'll kind of label them so our listeners have an idea of what I'm referring to. When you look at the Canadian stock market, when you look at the U.S., let's call it the S&P 500, European market, emerging markets, and the bond market in general globally, which areas surprised you the most on the downside? And the reason why I ask that question, as the growth guy on the team, I find when I talk to guys like you and gals like you, I find that what surprises you the most has the most upside potential going into future years. So I kind of wanted to get your take on that.
Sure. We'll talk about that in essence. You know, when I look around the world, I think the most disappointing market for me had been the U.S. because by far they've delivered the strongest earnings numbers. There's nowhere in the world that's compared against, you know, the 26 to 30% earnings growth we've seen out of U.S. companies. And yet the market, you know, is roughly flat for the year. So that's something in and of itself. But, you know, taking a step back from that, it hasn't been all that terrible in the emerging markets. There's been a lot of, you know, concern about growth slowing in China, but yet you're still seeing 10, 15% earnings growth coming out of the emerging markets. And yet when you look at the emerging market performance, the equity market's performance, you know, they've just entered recently. They've entered what you'd consider, at least in the developed world, a bear market. I mean, it's not a those happen about every 2 years in the emerging markets, but you're down 20% in the emerging market indices, and yet earnings growth has been okay. So, you know, I'd say on the two extremes, on the one side is big earnings numbers and a flat market, and in the emerging markets, it's been a, I guess, slower pace of earnings gains, but nothing worrisome at this stage, and yet the market has entered a bear market. And again, I think a lot of this has to do with some of those big ideas we were talking about earlier. Obviously, when it comes to trade, the emerging markets are very vulnerable, and that's being priced into those markets.
Yeah, so let's go to that point about trade. You mentioned before the break also that trade and your contrarian view to this. Kind of give us your thoughts behind that.
Yeah, so again, protectionism, very scary word, often associated with the Great Depression and all the problems that happened in the 1930s. But if you, again, the saber rattling is you know, new to all of us. You know, you haven't had a president that talks the way he talks these days. And I think it is unsettling to markets. But just have a look at what people are doing, not what they're saying, like I said. And, you know, you have the NAFTA. It's been signed. The new NAFTA agreement, USMCA, has been, or whatever they want to call it, is been signed. So that's progress. You have seen what is already ratified and will take effect on March of 2019 is the largest bilateral trade agreement in world history. No one seems to know about it because that doesn't sell newspapers, but it's between the European Union and Japan, and that's going to cover, that free trade agreement is coming into effect March. It's going to cover 33% of world GDP, so all those tariffs are going away. And you now have, like, in a matter of a few weeks after the big meeting that Trump had with the Chinese leader a few weeks ago, you have what looks like a thawing of relationships between the two nations, where already China is upping its purchases of U.S. agriculture. It's lowering its tariffs on autos. Obviously, there's still a lot to go there. But what I'm trying to say is that all these worries about trade are more noise, it seems. We are progressing. The world is becoming a little bit freer, not less free, even though it sounds like, you know, trade has been heavily restricted. So I just say look at what's been done. And then you have a bunch of, you know, mini bilateral agreements popping up all over the place. You know, you have Canada entered an agreement with New Zealand. You have the U.S. with Vietnam. You have the EU with South Korea, or sorry, U.S. with South Korea, EU with Vietnam. These little agreements have been popping up all over the place in the last, say, 6 to 9 months. So I'm not sure it's as bad as what people want to portray it to be. The rhetoric is bad. There's no question. But the outcomes are not as bad as what I think the markets are nervous about.
All right. So there sounds like, Miles, there might be some opportunity then if we take this particular view. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how an investor, let's just say a base case 50-year-old balanced investor, tell me a little bit about how you think that they should be structured going into 2019 to take advantage of some of these opportunities.
Sure. You know, obviously, the biggest fear I have is that we're seeing a generalized loss in confidence across the investor landscape. Yeah. And what do I mean by that? That's, you know, it has nothing really to do with the fundamentals. It has to do perhaps with our own psychology. In essence, you know, we've, after Lehman went bankrupt in 2008, we've seen, you know, over 700 interest rate cuts from global central bankers around the world. We've seen, you know, these central bankers purchase assets directly from secondary markets like bonds and credit to the tune of about $12 trillion. So there's been an immense amount of central bank support, and that is backing off. And, you know, what I worry about is we become so psychologically reliant on this direct stimulus by central banks that even a small change at the margin is creating big ripples in markets. So, you know, ultimately, I'm not entirely negative, but I have to, you know, recognize the fact that we do have some frayed nerves here that could persist for a while. And so if I was to say a 60-40, 60% equity, 40% bonds, say that's the typical sort of balanced portfolio, I would be closer to 50% stocks, 50% bonds. I would not, you know, in the stock portfolios, I would, you know, not be fully aggressive as I once was, say, only a few months ago, where, you know, I would tone down the amount of, you know, things like biotechnology stocks and you know, the FANG types of stocks. We have to back off those a little bit and, you know, move towards what I call more visible growth. And, you know, some of those areas could be, they don't always have to be super defensive and, you know, toothpaste selling companies. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, even aerospace and defense companies, things that aren't quite as cyclical as we were in only a few months ago. So, again, 50% stocks, I think, would be and upgrade the portfolios is what we've done. So a little higher quality, a little more visible earnings streams, but still equities nonetheless. And then the bonds, 50% bond allocation. And there's actually, we have put a small portion of gold into that defensive bucket. So not quite 50% bonds, something like 46% bonds, 4% gold, just in case some of the wheels come off. So, you know, it's not, I would say, we're not hiding under, you know, any beds right now or in a bomb shelter, but it's definitely less aggressive than what we've had over the last, say, few years.
Miles, maybe break down that equity exposure a little bit, too. You've made some comments about the U.S. and earnings, emerging markets, and so on and so forth. What kind of allocation do you see amongst the equity markets in the different regions?
Still, the highest quality names generally can be found in the U.S. It's the deepest market in the world. So, you know, when you're looking for defensive issues, it's just easier to find what I call reasonably priced defensive stocks in the U.S. So more of our allocation is still tilted towards the U.S. Even some of the software and services companies, which, you know, people don't think are that defensive, are actually quite defensive. And you have a lot of see-through earnings. You can see visibility in those earnings. So, you know, I'm still tilted towards the U.S. Mm-hmm. But as you say, or as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, the emerging markets themselves, which we were really underweight last year, we've come back a little bit. I'm not overweight emerging markets, but we've been dipping our toes in the emerging markets, thinking that, you know, maybe some of this is overdone. The fact is that the Chinese monetary and fiscal authorities have been stimulating their economy over the last 6 months. We think that you get a little better tone to Chinese growth and hence Southeast Asian growth in the first half of, you know, 2019. So I think there is opportunity in emerging markets going from really bearish or no, I wouldn't say bearish, that's the wrong term, underweight emerging markets to, you know, still underweight but much less so today. So I'd say number one is the U.S. and emerging markets look interesting to us. I would be much more interested in Europe if those Europeans could figure out what to do with Deutsche Bank.
Okay, so I have one quick question. We have about 30 seconds before we have to go. Many people are looking in the retirement area of GICs offering around 3% on an average laddered bond, a laddered GIC portfolio as an alternative to investing in the markets and so forth, just because of the fear that's out there. What's your thoughts behind that really quickly?
So the question I ask myself is you know, can I sleep at night? If I can't sleep at night, then I have to sell down to my sleeping point. So, you know, holding GICs is not is not insane at all. I think it's very practical for most people with, you know, a low risk tolerance. So, you know, getting 3%, if that's the case on GICs, hey, that's pretty competitive these days relative to, you know, you can buy a 10-year bond in Canada yielding about 2.2%. So, you know, you're getting GIC types of, you're getting those shorter horizons at pretty good pickup. So not a bad place when I told you about 50% bonds, a good chunk of that could be, you know, apportioned to your GIC for sure.
Miles, we want to thank you. We got to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time.
Always
again
a pleasure,
today.
Guys. Have a great day.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
We've been joined by Miles Zyblock, Chief Investment Strategist, Dynamic Funds. Okay, my friend, we got to wrap this up. That was some great information. We've got a seminar coming up.
Yeah, Tuesday, January 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Crowfoot Co-op Wine, Spirits, and Beer. You need to reserve your seat, so give us a call, 966-8400. That's 966-8400, or go to our website to register at morethanmoneyradio.com.
Okay, let's pull it all together in the next segment and talk about what it's going to look like in 2019. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.